If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, the world's top fitness, health, and entertainment podcast, we answer fitness and health questions asked by viewers and listeners just like you. But the way we open the episode is with an introductory portion. This is where we talk about current events. We talk about scientific studies, our own workouts. We mention our sponsors. Today's intro portion was 43 minutes long. So if you want to skip that and just listen to the fitness questions, go forward about 43 minutes. But if you want to have fun with us and listen to the whole episode, which is the best way to listen to Mind Pump,
tight.
Start in the very beginning. I'm going to give you a breakdown of this whole episode, okay? So we start out by talking about the heat wave here in the Bay Area. It is really hot.
Desert people making fun of us.
Yeah, right, I'm now waiting for the next plague or something to happen. Then we talked about the inland hurricane, the derecho. Is that how you say that?
I don't know. Derecho?
Derecho, Dorito? Something like that.
Something like that.
Then we talked about how a man saved a woman from a great white shark by jumping on the shark and punching him. So
it's like a superhero.
The most baddest ass man in the world. Then we talked about the episode that we recently dropped. It's carnivore versus vegan and some of our takeaways. We mentioned Miracle Spring Water. This is a new product.
Yeah.
Being sold to gullible people.
We'll heal you 100%.
Then we talked about billionaires and millionaires. How many, what percentage of them, I should say, are self-made? We mentioned a new study on CBD that shows that it improves blood flow to the hippocampus, thus potentially helping you with memory. Now, our favorite way to get CBD is with full-spectrum hemp oil. This is because it has lots of other cannabinoids. It also has terpenes that all work together. In other words, if you have CBD with other cannabinoids and terpenes, it's much more effective than if you just have CBD all by itself. Now, the best makers of full-spectrum hemp oil are Ned. They're a company that makes some of the best hemp oil we've ever used. It's high quality, super effective. We like to use Ned's hemp oil for things like relaxation and inflammation. I like to use it for gut health. And because you're a Mind Pump listener, you get 15% off. Here's how you do that. Go to helloned.com. That's helloned.com/mindpump. Enter the code Mind Pump and get 15% off. Then we talked about a new app that allows you to store your stuff in other people's houses. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, here's my junk.
Then we talked about how Doug is a phenomenal cook, and he makes incredible ribs, and he used the heritage pork ribs from ButcherBox. Now, ButcherBox is a company that delivers high-quality meat to your door. Eliminates a lot of middlemen, so the price is really good. They have the best grass-fed beef around that I've ever tried. They have heritage pork. Sometimes they also sell fish, so it's a great company. The prices are excellent, and because you listen to Mind Pump, you get hooked up. So to get the Mind Pump hookup, go to butcherbox.com/mindpump. Then we talked about an aviation service called Blade. What a cool name. That's right. And by the way, if you want to see all of the timestamps for all the topics in this episode, go to mindpumppodcast.com. So that's the first 43 minutes. Then we got into the fitness questions. Here's the first one. This person says, you guys talk about the muscle building signal. Can you get into that with a little more detail?
Yeah, what frequency?
The next question, how important do we think it is for people to have mirrors in their home gym? So like, our mirrors are important besides looking at your handsome face, Adam?
Ooh.
The next question, should teenagers focus on aesthetics after being introduced to resistance training? And should they monitor calories and protein intake? And the final question, this person has a question about developing confidence. What do we think you need to do to build confidence? Because we're the most confident.
Yeah.
We're confident in that.
Is that even a question?
That's right. Also, these are the final hours for our MAPS Suspension launch sale. So MAPS Suspension is a phenomenal workout program, full body, that utilizes only suspension trainers. That's it. All you need are suspension trainers, and you can work your back, your chest, your shoulders, your arms, your core, of course your core, and your butt and your entire lower body. It's a very effective workout. It's suitable for beginners and extremely advanced. Because you can adjust the leverage with suspension trainers, you can make exercises easy or super challenging. In fact, some of the most challenging bodyweight exercises are done with suspension trainers. Of course, like all MAPS programs, MAPS Suspension comes with exercise demo videos so you can learn proper technique and form. It comes with blueprints so you know how many reps, sets to do for your body. It's all programmed out, all written out, set up for you to follow. Just get on your phone or go online, follow the program. It's like having a personal trainer. Now, this program is $20 off because it is a brand new program. If you're listening to this episode right when it drops, you have a few hours left for this promotion. Here's how you take advantage. Go to mapssuspension.com, MAPSSUSPENSION.com, and then use the code SUSPENSION20 with no space.
T-shirt time! And it's T-shirt time!
Oh, shit, Doug, you know it's my favorite time of the week.
We have three winners, two for Apple Podcasts and one for Facebook. The Apple Podcast winners are Kafferthun and Crip Hippie. And for Facebook, we have Joey Reimer. All of you are winners. Send the name I just read to iTunes@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
You know what I'm waiting for right now, guys?
What's that?
The locusts and the boils.
Oh, yeah. I was betting on leprosy.
Dude. So. We had, okay, it got so I wasn't in the area, but, you know, I was talking to my parents.
Mm-hmm.
It got so hot, and it's going to be hot all week here in the Bay Area. Like, it was like 100 and...
an inferno.
Right? But then here's the weird thing. So I was talking to my father-in-law, and he's like, dude, he goes, it was 102 degrees, super hot. It's like insanely hot. And then like at 3 or 4 a.m., he goes... like huge booms, and he's like, I don't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah,
he goes, a crazy thunderstorm like he's never seen.
Yeah, so I was up when all that was forming, so I was still like, I was playing poker with my friends. We were at this house where you could see the skyline, and from the ocean going up over the mountains, you could see it forming and coming, and there was lightning bolts and all this crazy stuff coming at us. It was insane.
Yeah, he said it was uncharacteristic lightning.
Yeah.
Like, not the kind that we normally get here.
Yeah.
It also
it's got to deal with the heat.
It also created some of the weirdest weather we've ever had here. Yeah. I don't think I've ever recall the Bay Area feeling like that felt outside yesterday.
What was it? It was just muggy?
Oh, it was the... It was so... And that it reminds me, too, of something I wanted to say on the podcast. I'm glad you brought the weather thing up. I was thinking about the people right now that are out there that are working still so we could still do things. Like, I was at the zoo, right? I took my son to the zoo with my best friend and his son.
Oakland Zoo?
Zoo.
That's a cool one.
And they do it by appointment so they can limit the amount of people there, and you have to wear a face mask the entire time. But this was my first experience wearing a mask longer than maybe 10 minutes. Like, the longest I've had to wear a mask so far is going grocery shopping or in a store where it's air conditioned and you're only in there for 10 minutes and you're in and out, and then you're taking it off right away, right?
Yeah.
So I haven't experienced wearing a face mask for like an hour or 2 hours. And then being
in the heat,
and then being out in that heat that created this weird muggy, like tropical type of weird weather out there.
I wonder how many people passed out.
So Katrina, we're pushing the stroller. We're about an hour and a half deep in, and all of a sudden almost falls down.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, I reached to grab her, and I thought she tripped over something. I'm like, oh my God, did you trip? She's like, no. She goes, I just got dizzy and lightheaded. And she took the mask off and sat down for a little bit. But I was like, oh shit, just from being covered up like that in that crazy hot, humid weather for like 2 hours, and she got super lightheaded. I thought, oh my God, if that happened to Katrina, that's got to happen to people.
It's not smart, man.
I'm sure you have to kind of get used to it, right? Because I know some cultures, the women cover their faces all the time and it's hot. And then surgeons, right? I used to train a lot of surgeons, and they would do procedures. There was one procedure, I think it was called a Whipley procedure, if I'm not mistaken. It takes like 4 or 5 hours, and you're not going to the bathroom. You're operating the whole time, and you're wearing a mask the whole time.
Yeah.
So now that I've had to wear a mask for, like you said,
Adam, they probably have controlled air in there.
Yeah, but it's just a new level of respect.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, I know.
For 4 hours,
you don't want to be a pussy and like.
That's what I was thinking about was all the employees, right? That got to do this every day, or they're probably for 5 or 8 hours out of the day.
I know.
Like, it was crazy at the 2 hour mark, and I'm trying to be like, you know, enjoy this whole process with my son. Right? He's at the zoo for the very first time, and the whole time though, I'm looking at Katrina. I'm like, God, can we hurry up and just get through this whole thing so we can get out of here? Like, it was so hot, and I was so miserable with that thing on my face while it was muggy like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just made me think about everybody that is working right now that is working in those types of conditions. Like, man.
Yeah, well, speaking of the weather, too, I was brought to my attention, like through DMs, like about what was happening in the Midwest. Did you guys see about the derecho, the sort of inland hurricane that they've been experiencing?
What?
Yeah. So they've had like over 100 mile an hour plus winds that have just like swept through and decimated all these buildings and, you know, all the crops and everything in Iowa, and like the whole Midwest just took this massive like weather storm that hit. I've never even heard of just a derecho.
In the middle of the... How often does that happen, Doug? I'd like to look this up.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I didn't even know that was a thing. And, you know, because obviously you think of hurricanes being coastal because of, you know, like it coming off of the ocean and then, you know, forming. And so this is a different thing, but it has the same type of like wind power that just kind of blows through.
I don't want to be, because, you know, what happens is you start to like strengthen your own bias. Like 2020 is so bad. So then you hear something.
Of course. Yeah,
I know. You're like, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world.
It's like happening in little pockets all over the place.
Yeah. So I want to see if that's something that's super, super like incredibly rare, or like if it happens
right. a few times a
year. Or it happens every 20 years or 10 years, which is
That's pretty damn rare still.
I would think I've never heard of one though, you know? So
yeah, but I mean, every 10, 20 years, let me see, say the occurrence of derechos is divided into two seasons, the warm season. Okay, so 70% of them occur during these 4 months. Yeah, but how often often do they occur? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's 70% of them, that means that they happen fairly regularly, right? If they have a percentage of how many are going on during a month,
like
right?
Like every year?
It sounds frequent, but how severe it is, it must change dramatically.
Yeah, because I'm seriously, like, again, waiting for the locusts and boils. Like, I don't want to be in that state of mind.
It's just a weird week in news, I think. Yeah. Did you guys see the guy in Australia that jumped on the white shark or a great white and saved his wife?
Jumped on a white shark?
Yes.
What a badass.
They're out surfing. Great white grabs the wife.
Actually grabs her?
Yes, grabs the wife. Dude jumps off his surfboard onto the great white and punches him in the nose, and it releases his wife.
Dude, that works.
And he saved her life.
Bro, he's getting blowjobs every day forever now.
Is that crazy or what? Like, Australia.
Oh, man.
What a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
how scary is that, dude? You see your wife, like, all of a sudden, you know, get swept up by a shark.
I'm sure there's some husbands that are going to be like, oh, crap.
Oh, no.
I'll go get help. Yeah. nobody would say anything, you know? Yeah. It was a great wife. I had to get help.
Yeah.
But what a hero.
I know.
What an absolute hero to do that. That's like the most commendable thing of all time.
It's about as manly as it gets, right?
Dude, that's just it, man.
Australians, they got some manliness down there still.
See? Look at
it. Wow. He repeatedly imagine, like, first of all, it'd be scary to punch a big dude. You know what I mean?
Oh, maybe it wasn't his wife. I thought it was his wife. Maybe it was just some lady. Wow, that's even
that's
crazier.
Even better.
Just some random.
Yeah.
just some random
You're
woman.
My hero.
Yeah, let's see what it said. I mean, even better, right?
Yeah.
A badass.
Yeah.
Good for him, dude. It was his, his female companion.
Okay.
Wow, good for him, man. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, crazy. So the episode we did with the carnivore versus vegan, episode.
Will and Paul.
Yeah, Will and Paul.
The ultimate showdown.
Yeah, getting a lot of great feedback, but it's I love it when I leave a podcast feeling like I learned something.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, there's a couple things that I picked up that I'm actually that are really interesting to me that I feel like I learned. One is I never questioned certain vegetables as potentially causing, intolerances for me. Like, I never looked at broccoli, for example, and thought to myself, I wonder if this is causing any of my food, you know, if I have any intolerances
right,
to
or
it,
asparagus
right? or something like that, right? So there's that, and you brought that up, Adam. I thought the same thing, and then there was another thing that I really that I took from it, which is we don't place enough value on how we prepare our food. Because you can really negate a lot of the toxins in foods by how you prepare them. For example, wheat, you know, if you let it sprout and then if you grind it and soak it, that helps eliminate a lot of the, you know, the toxins. Same thing with beans. You ever hear people say if you soak your beans and then you cook them afterwards, you don't get as much gas or as much gastric distress. Or, of course, how you cook your meat and stuff like that. All very important. And I think it's something everybody should consider. So if you have foods that you might notice you have issues with, you might want to just look at cooking them more to make them, you know, tolerable. Like, I know for me, if I boil the heck out of my vegetables, easy to digest a big serving.
Yeah, I thought both guys did a phenomenal job. But I do think that if I had to pick a winner in that conversation, it was Paul. And only because of what you just said, and what I think I said after when we recapped, is after listening to both of them, and both made great arguments, great points, I would not do either one diet permanently. I would never run a carnivore diet permanently. I would never run a vegan diet permanently. But after listening to both of them talk, after listening to Paul, it did make me want to go try some things in my diet and change it. So that mm-hmm. to me was a sign of like, okay, he got through to me more than either one of them did just from that point alone, because I was like, oh, you know what? I'd never thought I've never eliminated asparagus and broccoli from my diet before. I would just mm-hmm. never think that that could potentially be an offender.
Right.
But now I'm going to go try and do that and see if it makes a difference, especially when he talked about he had eczema and I have psoriasis, which are similar related issues. And so if it cleared that up for him, I'm like, oh, I wonder if I've never tried to just get rid of the vegetables like that. Now, that's the point too. I feel like I hope that people take from this is not, you know, which diet is better, more so like listening to it and maybe people going like, oh, okay, I've never thought maybe if I eliminate these things or eat less of them or more of something else.
Considering other things, new angles. Yeah, I definitely like had my thoughts running after listening to that episode. And it's because it's so counter to a lot of the nutrition studies that I went to, you know, college and like went in all these nutritional courses. They don't bring any of this information up. So this is all like stuff. I'm like, wait a minute. It makes a lot of logical sense that these plants have developed these defense mechanisms and like we are breaking them down in a sense to be able to, get the nutrients out of them in the most effective ways.
Yeah, if I could boil down the biggest issue with people and diet, it would be not listening to your body, either because you don't know how to listen to your body, so you're not aware. So that's the average person, right? The average person just eats food that tastes good, doesn't even know what to pay attention to, and doesn't really know what healthy would be for them. The other side of that are fitness fanatics who also don't listen to their body because they become so dogmatic about a diet religion mm-hmm. because they read a study or some muscular person or some lean person tells them to eat a certain way. And so they hard-headedly continue to follow an eating style because they're like, but this is supposed to be healthy.
This is what it says.
Completely ignoring. Mm-hmm. I've trained women whose hormones were totally off because they were ignoring the fact that, you know, their low-carb diet was messing with their thyroid, for example. I've, you know, trained people who've had repeated gastrointestinal issues because they thought that this particular grain is supposed to be healthy, or I thought nuts were really healthy, so I'm just going to keep eating them even though I have terrible bloat and gas every single night. So I think it could all boil down to not listening to your body, either because you don't know how to listen or because you ignore, because you become so dogmatic.
I think the not knowing how to listen is probably the most common, because I think even somebody like myself, who's I think more aware when it comes to that. I mean, we all are read in the nutrition. We've been in fitness for 20 years. I've been manipulating and playing with my diet, but it hasn't been until probably the last 5 to 10 years did I really start to hone into like learning to pay attention to everything that I ate on a regular basis. I think so often we just mindlessly eat mm-hmm. and then the bloat, the stomach issues, the skin issues, all the poor sleep, low energy levels. You like by the time it hits you and you're aware that you're dealing with that stuff, like you haven't made the connection of what it could have been in the last 24 hours. Like that's what I feel. I feel like most people aren't connecting those dots.
Well, think about it this way, Adam, because you and I are very similar in this regard. We paid attention to diet for most of our career based off of aesthetics and strength.
Yeah, performance, right?
Yeah, so it was I ignored all the other stuff, right? And so it was like, what can make me look the leanest? What can mm-hmm. make me build the most muscle? But I was still dogmatic. I was still ignoring all the other stuff. So imagine if we went into diet and we had no pre-existing ideas. Nobody told us anything. All we did was go and listen and figure out and listen and pay attention to what made us feel best. I think we would have probably learned that faster.
Well, I have the cure for all this.
What is it?
Miracle spring water.
Huh? What's this?
Dude, I was watching this. So I was watching regular TV and like I forgot about commercials. Oh my God. There's this whole new hustle of this like televangelist that's like selling miracle spring water as like this holy water that cures you. What?
Wow.
I was like, wow, what the hell?
What were you doing watching regular television?
I don't know. I was on there and like, I don't know. Like I was at my friend's house and I was just like flipping through because we just watched the fights, you know, over the weekend. And like that came on and I'm like, okay, so this is a totally new angle. Like they have a product. It's not just like, you know, pay us and we'll pray for you or whatever. It's like now we got like, you know, substantial products going to heal all your ailments.
Yeah, heal all your dehydration ailments. Then they can legally do it, right?
Yeah.
They can list all the stuff that happens
it's
to you
a
when,
product.
You're, when you're dehydrated. Yeah. Yeah. It can solve and cure thirst. It can cure
dry skin.
Yeah, dry skin. Yeah,
headaches, nausea.
Exactly. You know what, though? That's they're obviously exploiting something that's been a part of spiritual practices for a while. Like I know Lourdes, I think it's called, that's in France. Like I think the water there has been supposedly blessed. Somebody saw a saint there. So people have been traveling there for a long time for experiences. Yeah. And you know, there is.
Dude, I just spot out a hustle, like, you know, especially in that arena.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that irritates me the most because, you know, all these people are already, like, all in. Their belief system is already there. And then now you're going to exploit that with some bullshit like this, like, and get these old people to buy water.
Now, how do you guys feel about that? Like, I know some people get, like, really angry about that, but then part of me is like, you know, fuck.
It might help
them. If you're a sucker like that. And then there's the other side. Like,
what if it does help?
We've talked, we've talked about, like,
dude, and they can measure that,
right? The psychological part of like, if you really believe it, then it is helping. And so, I mean, that remember the they talk about that with God, what are the drugs that are
placebo effects?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, the placebo effects with like your what kind of drugs?
I'm painkillers are the biggest ones,
right?
Like sugar pills, but whatever.
Yeah, that they use. And there's like a 50-50. I remember we debated that in psychology class whether it was. You know, okay, is it ethical to do it, even though their studies aren't proving that it actually changes it, but that there is enough people that get positive results from it, even if it's the placebo effect?
It's a real thing. There was a study, I brought this up on the show a long time ago, but it's a legit study where they did a fake knee surgery. And here's the thing, the more that they sell the realness of the fake thing, the more effective it is. What they did is they took people with knee pain and knee problems. And half of them, they actually operated and did a legitimate, you know, surgery on them, like a legitimate scope or whatever. Let's you know, solve these problems in a real way. The other half, the surgeon cut the knee open, sewed it back up, so the people could see that they had stitches, and so they fully believed they had the surgery. Here's the crazy part. At the end of the study, the same pain relief, the same results were seen on both sides. There wasn't a difference. You know what I'm saying?
Shows how powerful the mind is.
Very powerful. Yeah. So you're right. If people buying this miracle spring water,
if they're like,
I do feel better.
Yeah.
Well, now I feel bad.
You know?
Maybe it is really helping these old people. Like, oh, man. Like, my joints don't hurt anymore. Like, praise the Lord.
There's also a part of me that's like, you know, if you're going to fall for stuff like that, you know? Then that's up to you. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, how are we going to, as long as you're not a child, like if you're a kid, I get that. But if you're an adult.
Yeah, I think, that's why I feel like
people are buying Snuggies still. So
Marketing and advertising to children is unfair, I feel like, right? But if you're an adult and you buy into something like that, then I'm like, fair game. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of buying stuff, so I'll cover this real quickly because I brought up some interesting statistics. So California is talking about passing this crazy wealth tax that's insane.
There's no way this is going to fly, though, right? Dude, I mean, is it really possible this could fly?
They want to pour gasoline on our state now? It's like it's not enough that's burning?
No. I know exactly. Yeah. Listen to this. So the proposed tax rate would be up to 0.4% of net worth. So it doesn't matter how much you – whatever. Just your total net worth. And then the tax will follow you. If you move out, so you will get taxed at this for I don't know how many years.
So let me make this clear then. So let's just say I've been a really good boy over the last 10, 15 years, and I've just been slowly socking money away and saving and saving and living a very modest life, and I've put away $1 million. That can be taxed. Is that what you're saying?
They'll tax your net worth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much money you're
worth. Gavin Newsom, the new Prince John.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you move, then it'll follow you. And I think it's like, I don't remember how many years, 5 years, something like that. Silly. Where if you move out, it's a proposed tax. But this made me look up some statistics because I said, you know, it's that we love to target, or politicians, I should say, love to target, and I put in quotes, the wealthy, because they're an easy target and most voters don't consider themselves wealthy.
Right. Oh, it's not going to affect me.
Yeah. So it's
and it, not me.
And, it, and it's easy to look like at this. It's easy to look at someone like, I don't know, Jeff Bezos, right? And be like, oh, look at him. You know, he's got all. But there's 2 points I want to make with that. One, they're that wealthy because we give them that much money because they did something a lot of us liked.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel weird about being upset about that. Like, we gave them the money because they did something we all liked. It's weird to be to want to go after them for that. Mm-hmm. But then there's this other part where a lot of people think that millionaires and billionaires didn't earn their money or aren't self-made. Mm, like, maybe they're just whatever. So I looked up the statistic. First of all, 88%, this is huge, 88% of millionaires are self-made. So the vast majority of millionaires earned it themselves. They actually created that money themselves. Billionaires, believe it or not, is less, a lot less than that. 57% of billionaire wealth is self-made. So a lot of these billionaires or
inherit
a lot of money. And
that makes it's gonna be like oil money.
Well, exactly. I was gonna say that makes sense though, right? If you, I mean, think if you built this even in like a big real estate empire, you own 50, 60 properties, you have a son, then your son comes right in and gets to inherit that and then take that from there and maybe turn it into $1 billion.
Right. But check this out. So the number of billionaires with inherited wealth has dropped 29% since 2014.
Oh, wow.
So the self-made billionaire number,
it's a bunch of new billionaires,
is climbing and climbing and climbing. It seems to be climbing over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years or whatever. So this is an interesting thing we should all kind of pay attention to, that a lot of these people got there because they did something that so many of us liked that we voluntarily gave them this money. And I don't know if going after them that hard is smart, you know, especially for a state like California, because I feel like that'll just drive
Doug and I had
them
this.
Out.
Doug and I had this conversation on the way home this week, and we were having the Jeff Bezos conversation. Did you know, he looked it up, I don't know if you know, you know how many people they employ? You know how many employees he has?
No.
Almost 1 million, right? Is that right, Doug?
I think it was like 870,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
How many other companies can say that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, literally, like an entire city, like the size of our city almost, right? Yeah. You could, like, he's employed by himself, like, that's insane to me. And then for people to come after someone like that, I go, Doug and I were like, imagine if you're him and you're like just so fed up. You're like, fuck this. I'm closing everything down. I'm done. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just like, I'm shutting everything down. Like, it's your company. You can do whatever you want with it. Like, imagine if that you got so fed up of like people coming after you and putting you down over shit like that, that you decided to shut fucking shop one day, dude. Just, I'm done. I'm closing shop.
You totally could.
Well, you know what would happen? The government would be like, we have to save all these jobs. And then we would all end up paying as taxes to save 800,000 jobs or whatever.
Right, right.
You know?
But now they're not doing anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you know, it's hard to see what people like this have produced, what their innovations have produced. But, I mean, think about it for a second. Amazon is one company. There's a lot of companies right now that I think are saving us during this pandemic. But Amazon is one of them. You know, like, we're not having to go to the store as often. We're able to keep getting what we need for low prices. It's the very next day. It's keeping things extremely competitive. It's allowing small businesses on the internet to, you know, advertise their goods and compete with name brand things because of the ratings system that they've provided. So Amazon is one of those companies that's, you know.
What's our next best thing is a USPS?
Oh, geez.
Can you imagine if they were like delivering all of our goods?
Well, you know, for a long time they kept saying it was impossible to deliver things 24 hours. And then, you know, companies like FedEx.
Yeah, they're like, I would give up.
Started doing it. And then they figured out, you know, kind of a way to do that. So anyway. Hey, so I read another interest. There was a big study that came out on CBD over the weekend. Did you guys hear about this?
No.
So it's a big one. It just came out. There's a study finds that CBD dramatically increases blood flow to certain parts of the brain, in particular the hippocampus. So the hippocampus is important for short-term memory, long-term memory. And this backs up other studies that support that people who use cannabis along with CBD and other cannabinoids, so not just THC, but with CBD and other cannabinoids, that they get less of that short-term memory loss.
Isn't this, I mean, you're the one that got me to do this. Like, so if it's rare now that I like have like a, where I smoke a full joint or have quite a bit. Like, this has to be a weekend or a time where I'm just like going to cut loose, maybe watch like a funny movie, and I'm going to have more than like my two little hits to help me go to sleep. When I do that, I always make the effort to go and take like a couple drops of the hemp oil. And that's because you're the one who told me that you want to try and keep the ratio 1-to-1, and it's for the memory loss. Mm-hmm. And that's what you told me before. And if there's ever a time, any time I ever feel like that, it's if I smoke too much, I feel like I forget.
Well, isn't this the cool part about plants where they have like one certain aspect, but then they balance it out like with another part of the plant? So like if say if one is toxic, they also has the antidote within the same plant. It feels like, you know, CBD counters a lot of that. So short-term memory loss is something you attribute to people that smoke weed.
Well, cannabis, as soon as people started to value it for its hot, getting you high effects, that's what we started to breed cannabis for. So like early days, cannabis was...
Right, we made it really strong. It used to not be like that.
No, no. Early days cannabis, I mean, you would find, you know, growing naturally or whatever, it would be probably 3%, 4% THC. Now, when you go to a cannabis store, especially here in California, it's hard to find anything lower than 16 or 15%.
Yeah.
Usually people are using 20% or higher.
Right.
Super high THC. But when THC is high, then other cannabinoids are lower. It's not like it produces more THC, but it keeps producing more of the other things. So you get this kind of off balance. And it's well known that if you have a lot of THC, you get short-term memory loss. That the dumb stoner...
it's funny how this stereotype is true.
It's funny how this rule applies, I feel like, with us humans. Once we get involved and we start doing things, like if found in nature, if weed were to just to grow and you were to smoke it, you'd probably be completely fine. But we have found a way to crossbreed it, concentrate it, to make it crazy strong and then justify why it's okay, when the reality is if we would have just probably had it and left it in its normal form.
Yeah, it's natural state.
We'd probably be all right. I mean, this is good news, too, for people who use hemp oil and don't really care about THC and they just want the relaxing effects and the anti-inflammatory effects, that they, if they don't use THC, if they just use hemp oil, they may actually be improving their brain's ability to think sharper or to have better, short-term memory. Because the study showed.
Well, at the bare minimum, to stay 1-to-1. I mean, you're the one that got me. So this is just another study that really confirms that, right? Because you knew that before. You were the one that made me privy to that.
Yeah, the studies before didn't show the blood flow to hippocampus. The studies before just showed people who had, CBD with their THC just had less memory loss. So it was like they would do these studies and find, because you can reliably produce short-term memory loss effects in people if you give them high doses of THC for a little while. Then you'll see that their short-term memory starts to get a little messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But they had people who used CBD along with their THC, and they found that wasn't really the case. And that was those are older studies. That's when I brought it to you. But you're right. As soon as we get our hands on something, like look at fruit. Look how we've bred fruit. Like there's you can look up old
just
paintings.
Just look up a banana.
Yeah. Like super, super old paintings of fruit, and they're like, that's a banana. It doesn't look anything like...
No, tiny and has tons of seeds.
Big black seeds in there, or watermelons. I remember when I was a kid and I ate a watermelon, there was hella seeds in that thing. Have you guys eaten a watermelon?
No, they got rid of them.
There's no seeds.
I don't understand. Yeah,
they grow seedless ones now.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
That's us. It's like, we just want the sugar.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just give
us
the sugar.
Yeah, so true.
Forget all the other stuff.
We castrated watermelons.
Yeah. I had some tech news to bring up. There's an app out, and I think I brought up a similar one. This is becoming a competitive space. This one's called Neighbor. And it basically, and I talked about one that did something similar before where you can rent out your space. It's becoming like a popular thing, which is interesting to me because I was just telling Katrina right now, we're in this like kind of limbo phase of maybe we're going to move, maybe we're not. And, I went month to month on our place that we're at right now. And so one of the things I'm like, why don't we just like pack up, get everything out of this house that we don't absolutely need on a day-to-day. So if we decide to go get a place, then we can just up and move, and I'll just put it in storage. And I'm actually exploring this as a possible option because it's becoming so popular, and I haven't actually used it here in the Bay Area, but I know that these apps are exploding, which allows you to go rent out like somebody else's garage or whatever, instead of going to a storage unit. Like a storage unit is X amount of dollars, whatever. You can now, these apps now allow you to go, if you're somebody who has a 3-car garage and you don't use one side of
your
garage,
brilliant.
You could rent it to 4 or 5 different people for a certain amount of money every month and collect cash for yourself.
You think the storage unit business is going to take a big hit from this?
Of course. Yeah. Well, I okay, should I? Okay, I don't know if they're going to take a big hit because that's like it's been that industry's been growing forever. I thought that.
Yeah.
I
wanted to get into that, but yeah, I don't know.
Like, right, because we keep Americans, we keep consuming. We're consuming faster than we can store, so the storage units keep popping up, and there's plenty. But it's just become more competitive. So what I think you would see, maybe you won't see a big hit as much as you'll see like more competitive rates.
I don't think it would. Okay, I'm just speculating, but I don't know if it would impact long term storage. But short-term storage, I could totally see that. Like, if you're moving and you just need storage for like a month,
right?
You know,
why get a storage unit?
Exactly. Now, if you're going to keep something, you know, in storage for a year or two, I don't think it's going to impact that.
Well, here's where I'm at. Like, if it becomes so competitive, and this is what I told Katrina, like,
it's good for the consumer.
This
obviously.
Is the type of person that I am. Like, you know, for $125, you know, a month or whatever, if it meant I can get rid of a bunch of shit that I have in my garage and everything like that, and I can, there's maybe somebody in my neighborhood that's doing this. Mm-hmm. And that, so it's like literally less than a block or two away from my house, and I can go get it if I need it whenever I want to. I mean, I would do that.
This is all my shit.
Is this for you, is this for your shoes, Adam?
There is a part of that.
What if you put all your shoes in someone's garage and then you go back and check on a month later and the dude's like was wearing them a bunch of times?
He's walking around like making bacon.
With just happens to be a size 12.
Hey, those are my Jordans.
He's got your Yeezys on and he's gardening. All right. I forgot my shoes inside. It's not a big deal. I'll dust them off.
So,
hey, neighbor.
Yeah. I mean, that does bring up a point that you think right away. And I looked into this because I thought, okay, wait a second. Like, you know, some, you know, regular Joe Schmo down the way, he's going to rent me this space and he's going to have my shit. What if he steals it? What if someone else steals it? What if it's not as secure? Like, part of what you're paying for with these storage units is like the barbed wire fences, the cameras, like the high security, right? But they're in order to be on this app, like, or the app company itself is, I want to say it was $1 million, like $1 million insurance policy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So if you have, as long as you're storing stuff less than $1 million.
It was the same concerns when Uber came out, right? It was the whole thing of like, you know, who knows who these people are? They're not vetted and, you know, they might just drive you to Mexico or something. Who knows? Oh, no. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, can you take me to the airport? It's absolutely.
Like, didn't happen.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, do you have both kidneys? Why do you ask? No reason.
Yeah, no reason.
Yeah. You know, that's what they said about eBay. eBay was one of the first companies to do that, all the retail companies said, no way this will work. There's no way this will work. People are going to get ripped off. The satisfaction rates are going to be terrible. And the funny thing is eBay's, like the trust factor with eBay, or how often that people are good on there, is just as good as any retail.
Yeah.
So any other market. What I'm curious about now then is like, okay, so because some of these properties that I've been looking at too, they have like a little bit of land. So like an acre or two or whatever. Like, what is to stop me from building like a shed on my property?
And just doing that.
Sure.
And just doing that.
Just hustling it in.
And having, you know, 20, 30 sheds on there to collect monthly income to help pay for the mortgage of the place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if you're going to start to see like similar, like you brought up the Uber thing, is the taxi company's going to freak out, or all the storage unit companies going to freak out and start to try and legislate against the ability to do that. Like, right now, this might be one of these things that we see that grows so fast. Like, I don't think a lot of people are aware of this.
Yeah. No, it'll get too big. If it's good, it'll get big too fast for legislators to mess with. And then by the time it's that big, then it'll be a battle.
Like, right. Like, keep your eyes open, you might see this. That's a mass. Like, the storage industry is a massive industry that just kind of flies under the radar. Not a lot of people talk about it. Here's these apps that are starting. And I've seen quite a few of them. I told you about the Park one, the Neighbor one now. And I forgot what the other one was called. But, you know, people are able to rent their parking space in front of their house.
You know, you can rent your couch.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that?
Yeah, couch.
That someone one's could weird.
Spend a night on their couch.
Couch surfing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This makes
They do this with, you know what else they do? It's like pools. Like, so that's popular right now where people
pool
have
parties?
Yeah. Well, just having a pool at your house. So the heat wave coming through right now, and you can't, and if you're not in town, you're not using your house or whatever like that, you could rent your pool out for the day.
That's such a liability. I wouldn't want anything to do with that.
Well,
sounds
if
like
you own a pool, dude, no way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that.
I don't like it. That's really good.
Someone could drown, or you could have some creep. Just, you know what I mean?
Any, that one's. Yeah.
Hey, I'm renting my pool for any college graduation parties.
Yeah. They're jumping off your roof.
I'm going to watch. Yeah, I'll Instagram. Be on the roof watching just in case anybody drowns or whatever.
I mean, it's just like, you say that, but it's like, what's the difference between that and VRBO or Airbnb? The
you're
same
right,
risk.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying? It's you're only limiting it to the pool versus the whole house.
It just feels a little more like yikes.
Yeah, but the thing you said about the store, you know, having people store stuff in your garage, and then you said $1 million policy. The bad side of me is just thinking of the scams people can run where you'd be like, hey, dude, come put your stuff in my garage. Somebody will steal it. Don't worry. Insurance will give you.
Okay. So now what I think about, and that's the beautiful thing about eBay, Ubers, is like, I'm sure there's a rating system on this. And if this guy's known for
the watch patterns.
Yeah. I mean, if you look it up and he's got a 2-star rating because his place has been jacked twice, are you gonna drop your shit there? Like, no, I'm not going to store it there. So it'll self-regulate, right?
Yeah,
like,
right?
So maybe somebody gets away with a scam like that once or twice, you know, but after a while, people won't drop their stuff there.
This guy's super cheap. Oh, he's only got 2 stars.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I forgot to tell you guys what my son said about you guys when we were up at the house.
Well,
or maybe I did text you. It was hilarious. We're sitting there, and we're all having conversation where everybody goes, Doug's he's a really good cook. He's also really funny. He said, oh, that's cool. Yeah. He goes, Justin. So he started kind of breaking everybody down. Yeah. He goes, Justin's like a, he kind of sounds like a surfer dude.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Shock-a-nar-nar.
I'm like, yeah, he does. Yeah, and he's like, Adam's a dad.
I don't know if that's a compliment.
That is not a compliment from a high school kid.
No.
That is definitely not a compliment from a
funny guy. Adam's the dad.
Dude, I went
I'm some surfer, bro.
Yeah. He's like,
man, it's so funny to hear different perspectives.
Yeah.
Well, especially from a kid like that because it's completely pure, right? Like, he's not biased or anything like that.
Oh, no, my kids love you guys, though. That's what they kept saying.
Dude, I've been trying to get rid of the surfer accent forever. It's still there.
Dude, bro, you grew up, even though you grew up.
Get rid of it.
Even though you grew up in the mountains, you grew up in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. Well, it's just right now. I mean, it's 10 minutes away.
I would way rather be the buff surfer guy, though. I mean, if that's what he's related than the dad. You know what I'm saying? I'm proud to be a dad. Don't get me wrong. But that's not the compliment you want from a high school kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a dad.
I was like, what do you mean by dad? He's like, yeah, the way he dresses. No, he didn't say that.
Right to the heart. Hey, speaking of Doug, though, Doug is quite the chef. Him and I have been going back and forth on battling on the rib recipes. And I heard you nailed one out again lately, Doug. Yeah.
I think that's what won Domenico over, right?
Well, yeah, I made the Korean barbecue ribs when I was with the kids, but I've been working on my baby back ribs on my Traeger here for a while. And I've been using the fall off the bone recipe you find on the Traeger site.
Oh, yeah.
With the butcher box ribs, but I wasn't actually nailing it. It wasn't working for me. So
what were you missing?
Well, for one thing, I was getting them overcooked. And I wasn't getting that fall off the bone thing that I was going for. So I just tweaked a lot of different things, like the smoke time. And then I put them in a foil pan with apple and grape juice. Mm. And then I put foil on top, really seal it well. And then I kind of steam it in there on the grill. And I extended that out another 15 minutes. And then I shortened the back end where you turn up the heat and you brown the ribs. So last time I did it, they're super juicy. They fell off the bone. It was amazing.
That's real similar to how I do it. I do brown sugar, honey, and apple juice inside the foil, but almost identical to. You know what I haven't been able to do is, and I don't know if it's because I've been cooking so much of the butcher box meat, is somebody else gave us some ribs. I don't remember. I think it was Katrina's mom gave us some ribs, and I cooked it, and they were terrible. So I've gotten used to cooking that size of rib, I think, and that anything else that I've tried to cook, I'm off now.
The fatty acid profile is going to be different, too. It's because it's grass-fed, probably, right? So,
well, I don't know if the ribs are grass-fed. Are they the pork?
The heritage pork.
Heritage pork, yeah.
Still going to be a little different,
right? Yeah, it's going to be different, definitely, because they give them good quality food.
Oh, it's definitely different. Like I said, it took me a while to get them down. Now that I have them down really well, if I've gone to cook other ribs, I have not been able to hit it out the park.
Well, you guys are scientists with the way you guys grill meat. I've never really paid attention that way. I grill it, and then I eat it. I don't know. I don't do the timing and all that stuff. But there's definitely a difference when I eat meat after you guys make it. It's an incredible experience. Well, now, I mean, you know, meat's good, right? As long as you don't overcook it, it's going to be fine. But you guys definitely bring a whole new level.
Well, are you not? Are you not a big griller? Do you grill a lot at home? Or?
I grill a lot, but I definitely don't do what you do, where you know, you made us all steaks, and he runs in and he goes, "Put the timer on for 2 minutes."
He's got the timer. Yeah. He's got
let me know in 2 minutes, and I learn
the searing right at the pivotal moment to keep the juices in.
2 minutes is up, and then he does his thing, and then he closes it, and then he watches the temperature, and then let me know when another 2 minutes is up, and then and then he'll open the thing for I don't know how many seconds, close it. I'm like, what's he doing?
Yeah,
you know. But the steak comes out incredible.
Talk about like the difference between a cook and a chef. Like anyway, that one of them is more formulaic, right? Versus the other one's a little bit more create. Like is kind of adding things and adjusting and all that. So, but I grill on Weber, and so it's like I'm always there, like having to manipulate and mess with it the whole time to make it like taste good.
I love charcoal grill.
Yeah, but it tastes good.
Well, it takes another. I mean, my brother-in-law, who's like the total foodie, right? His theory is that like, you know, he's a purist, so like everything has to be on a charcoal.
Oh yeah,
like all these cool things, like the Traeger we're talking about, and I mean, it's like you could cheat. I mean, that's just it. Is like, so for me, it's about the end product. I want the best. I want to try and emulate the best steak that I've had in a restaurant
and replicate it.
Yes, yeah,
so
right.
It's like the next time.
Yeah,
it's
that's my goal.
You're not like, oh, this is the way cavemen did it. Everything else is too much.
I'm like, if I got the cool thing to measure the temperature of the meat, and I got the gauge to measure the heat in there, like okay, and I could figure this out, I can replicate like the perfect steak almost every time now.
Yeah.
But with the Weber, you don't get that. You don't get a temperature gauge or anything. You're watching.
It's all by feel. Almost.
Yeah, you're eyeballing it, and so I mean. Which, if you're a purist, like you appreciate that. But I'm like, I just want a great steak.
I feel
steak.
My meat.
Justin's using the force.
I'm feeling it.
You know that, right, Adam? He's like,
see?
Feels right.
More ways of the Jedi.
Yeah, speaking of grilling, almost the barbecue caught fire again.
I wish I could be there when that happens for you. I could just see freak out.
No, bro. It's okay. First, I got to clean the barbecue. And then I turn it on. I leave it there to heat up a little bit. I go back. I open it up, and the thing's on fire.
I like that, though.
No, I don't like that kind of fire.
Yeah, because it gets so.
What?
Well, here's a downfall of cooking in a really clean gas barbecue all the time. You may as well use the fucking oven. Mm. Then it's like an oven. Because
the oven doesn't cook it like that.
Very similar. If you don't got a good flame coming off there every once in a while.
But I'm talking about the pan underneath was a flame. Yeah, okay, Justin was there when it caught fire.
Yeah, I saw it.
Well, yeah, hey, if you close the fucking thing and you walk away and you got greasy ass meat or fatty meat on there, like it will definitely light that. That's gonna keep an eye on it.
It was overwhelming the volume of dripping grease when we did it.
Yeah,
you had all those burgers on there.
Sent you guys an angry text.
Oh yeah, especially a bunch of burgers for sure. We'll do that.
I didn't have anything on it, by the way.
Well, yeah,
I was just heating it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just cooked 12 3-inch fucking ribeyes in there back-to-back nights. So there's definitely some residue left over from that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Those were good, by the way. Those
steaks. Are really good.
Yeah. In fact, when I got home, I wanted more. So I went to the store and got myself.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
After back-to-back nights like
Dude,
that?
Dude, they're so good.
So good on the gut.
Yeah. Well, Doug, man, that's something I got to steal from Doug.
What a dad conversation, by the way. This is so great.
talking about barbecuing.
The perfect
time.
Let's talk
about New Balance next. Huh? You guys,
well, Doug does the mushroom and onions, man, to put over the top of the ribeyes. That's the kicker.
Oh,
man.
My God. Yeah, those onions alone. Yeah. So my daughter's never loved mushrooms. And the ones you made, Doug, she was like requesting them now. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
Hey, you know, you brought up California, transition out of this barbecue man talk here, or dad talk. So I wanted to bring up something that I thought was interesting.
Lawnmowers.
I know. Yeah. I was just thinking that. I want my grass.
No, like a lot of people leaving like the cities and stuff. And so over in New York, you're seeing a lot of the people that own like the Hamptons and they travel there for like summer, like are now staying there. Mm-hmm. And so this has also allowed a company called Blade, which is an aviation helicopter company that is like blowing up right now because so many of these execs that live in New York that have a house in the Hamptons are staying in the Hamptons and then they're commuting back and forth using this aviation.
Dude, what a sick name for a company.
Right.
A Blade.
Wait, so they're taking helicopter to work?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I'm sure it's not an everyday thing, right? So you're taking it once a week maybe. You're going back, but you're working from home like 80% of the time.
Dude,
right
Magnum
now,
PI pulled it off.
Yeah, and, what a flex. flex. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
I'll be at the meeting. Don't worry. You know? Yeah. What's that sound outside? Walk out with your briefcase.
That's when you know we've officially made a show in to one slow of our events in a helicopter.
Where is Adam at? He's not here. He's
You got to have a briefcase. You know, you just have to carry something.
Justin will arrive in it.
Like with like protein bars in it?
Yeah. No. Justin will arrive in a personal like rocket pack. That's what I see him do. Adam shows up in the helicopter. Yeah. Justin one-ups it.
I seen that too just recently. Sick. That somebody was driving, flying one of those. Was it you who shared that article? One of you guys shared an article of someone flying around one of those.
There was one where this guy was flying and he had like two independent, like engines that I don't know what kind of engines they were, but they were like on his arms and he was flying around an aircraft carrier.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, dude.
Super safe.
Yeah, we're Iron Man now.
This quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
First question is from Damian Leverett Fitness. You talk a lot about the muscle-building signal. Can you explain this more and how to know if your workout is adequately creating this without working to all-out failure or going beast mode all the time?
Thanks, you got
to
have, good Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Got to have good Wi-Fi to get that signal.
Yeah, no, so, dang, here's a that's dad a good joke. Point. That yeah, was a dad joke, Adam. That was not bad. Good try. So, all right. So,
it has some boosters.
This was a big, big moment for me as a trainer. I remember when I finally made the connection that all my workouts did was send a signal to my body so that my body could adapt. That's really all it was. It wasn't about beating myself up. It wasn't about getting sore. It wasn't about lifting the most weight. Those are all components of the workout potentially. But really, the workout was about sending the right signal. So once I understood that, and I really got that, then my workouts got much more effective because then when I would go in, I would think to myself, am I sending the right signal? Am I living in a way that's going to cause more adaptation? So your muscles, first of all, they don't really maintain in the sense that they don't just stay the same. They're constantly building or reducing. The way you build muscle is the building process is stronger or outweighs the breaking down process or the atrophy process. And by the way, the atrophy process can be very powerful. If you put your arm in a cast for a week and then took it off, just a week, you would see significant weakness and atrophy of your arm in that short period of time. So it's like this constant battle that's going on. But the way you approach your workouts should be, is this workout producing the desired result, which can be getting stronger, maybe building muscle, getting leaner, improving my mobility. Is that what's happening? Or am I just going to the gym and satisfying my ego by lifting more weight than the guy next to me or by beating myself up? So now my ego is satisfied because I had this crazy hard workout. Now, what determines whether or not it's the right signal for you is super individual.
Yeah.
This is the thing now. It's very individual. The right workout and the right dose for you is the best dose, and it may not be the right dose for the person next to you. There's a couple things you could watch. One of them is soreness. In the past, I thought getting really sore was a great sign. Later on, I realized a little bit of soreness is okay, but a lot of soreness means I overdid it, and I need to back off a little bit. That one's one signal I like to watch.
Well, this really came full circle for me when I finally grasped the difference between adaptation and recovery. For most, even my training career, I explained this wrong to many, many clients, so I feel bad about this because I was still under the impression that when we go to the gym, we tear and we break down. Like that was like how I explained it. We tear and we break down these muscle fibers. The body then signals it to, oh my God, we've teared these down. We got to recover them and we got to make them stronger. And so that was the adaptation process. Where I was missing the link here was that it's not just this recovery process of recovering from the damage. It's also this adaptation process. And I think, Sal, you explain it really well, and you've done this on the podcast several times where you use the analogy of the suntan, right? And burn, like you could go out, like if I haven't been in the sun in a long time and I go out and I lay out for like 3 hours, I will burn my skin. Now, I definitely will get a little tanner, actually, but also burn it. Like, and it'll hurt, and I'll be peeling, mm-hmm. and I'll get a little bit of color from that, but...
Then you lose it.
Right, and then I lose it, and I don't want to go out in the sun anymore because I'm burned already. And so I think of it like that, because if I go out in the sun for 10 minutes at a time, though, every single day, over the course of like 2 weeks, I'll also see that I got as tan, if not more tan, but I didn't have to lay out there mm-hmm. for 3 hours and go through the whole burning process and the healing process, right? So I think of it the same way now with like training, is I'm looking for that sweet spot. Like, I want to train hard enough to where the body adapts and it starts to build muscle because it recognizes this signal that I'm sending to it, but I don't want to damage it so hard that my body's just trying to recover all the time from the sun or from the workout. So you're looking for that sweet spot of getting the benefits of both of the adaptation process and the recovery process, and you don't want that constant like hammering it so hard that all the body is thinking about is trying to recover. You're not allowing it also to adapt.
I think a major adjustment I had to make once started to understand this whole principle, a bit more in depth, was to really evaluate where, like, if I were to like approach my workout and try and find that like optimal dose, like it was a lot easier for me to exceed it. So in terms of like intensity or like overdoing it, it was very easy for myself to go beyond that versus, approach it from less and then kind of build my way up to try and find and hone in what that, that particular dose was for me. And so I started to adjust the way I train people because I was always under the impression that I need to ramp up their intensity to get them to get more work out of it, which then would produce, a better result to get them more muscle. But it was actually the opposite. I found where when I started reducing the intensity and then building it back up slowly and not like trying not to overdo it, they had better results.
I think there's a real simple way to give people advice listening right now, because I really think that there's two groups here. If I'm talking to a client who is a complete beginner, lifting weights, really, really unaware, like they need a little more intensity in their life. They're less likely to hammer themselves every time they go in the gym. They're more intimidated, scared. They ease themselves in. And so getting that person to learn to kind of push and stretch themselves a little more, I find myself having that conversation. If you're the person who likes to go to the gym, you've been lifting weights for years, you're more of an advanced lifter, you're more likely to fall in the category like I think all three of us in this room, which is I'm more likely to overreach than I am to go into a gym and train and not do enough mm-hmm. because I've chased that sore feeling and I've learned to like that feeling. So I tend to go work out and go like, oh, I need to feel that crazy burn, or I got to feel that sore the next day to feel like I got a great workout. And that's not true. And so I just did this the other day with Doug. I worked out with Doug up in Tahoe, and I was joking about how like roasted my back was because I hadn't deadlifted in a long time. I'd hurt my foot and I'd been out from like squatting and deadlifting for a while. It was my first time deadlifting back. I told Doug I'd just lift what he's lifting, and I didn't realize he was going to go heavy that day. And
that was light for Doug.
Yeah,
it was a light day.
So I was lifting with Doug, and my ego was like, okay, I'm not going to go peel weight off. I'm lifting with Doug. I'm supposed to be the trainer, supposed to be stronger than him. So I lifted right with him. And I was fried for the next 3 days, like absolutely fried from it. And that's just, I still, even all these years, even after giving advice on this podcast, still have a tendency to overreach. And that's not the goal for maximal results. You want to just stretch yourself a little
although
bit.
I do have to bring up the point. So the beginner, I think a lot of times like they don't understand what that line is. And so even, what may seem to be like a normal workout may be way too much for them.
True.
And so, like they have to find that balance before they can even, they have to be able to ramp it up very slowly. I still go with the slow approach with them.
Yeah. The muscle building signal, understanding that is what allowed me to initially create MAPS Anabolic, because I sat down and I said, okay, it's all about sending a signal, and I know lifting weights sends that signal. What other things could potentially send a muscle-building signal? One of them is a hormonal signal, right? You could give anabolic steroids to someone, the hormonal signal builds muscle. Could I send other muscle-building signals that are natural that don't include beating the crap out of myself? This is the trigger session concept. And I'll say this for most people. You'll get better results with more frequent, less loud signals than you will with less frequent, super loud signals. In other words, you're better off doing easier workouts 5 days a week than you are doing one super hard, massively intense workout
for
a week.
Sure.
This is true for most people. It's still true for myself. Even today, I'm incorporating some trigger sessions here and there. And the results I get every time I do this consistently blow me away. And it's a low-intensity muscle-building signal. It just compounds on top of the normal signals I send, which are with my normal workout. So this is why frequency is so important, because frequent lower level intensity workouts, they don't send a loud signal, but they send a signal and they don't create a lot of damage. And so what they do is they just compound on top of your normal workouts. So if you're not incorporating things like trigger sessions or focus sessions, give them a shot.
Next question is from S. Costanzo 430. How important do you think it is to get mirrors for your home gym?
Oh, well, any trainer will tell you that mirrors, if you're working out alone, are super important. Because as a trainer, one of your jobs was to watch your client's form. And I'll tell you what, people are so unaware that their form is off, that one shoulder's a little high, that their hip moves in one direction a little bit, that there's a little bit of an imbalance. This happens to me. And I'm advanced. I've been working out for a long time. So mirrors help you watch your form and pay attention to, like, when I do curls, for example, the simple exercise like curls, when I watch in the mirror, I'm very careful to not allow my left shoulder to hike up a little bit, because that's the tendency. The tendency is when it gets heavy and hard, my left shoulder wants to shrug up a little bit. And if I didn't have a mirror, I wouldn't be able to notice that.
Love to yourself in the mirror.
Why are you looking at me? That's Adam.
I'm just saying.
No, this is actually, it might seem like a silly question for some people, but I think it's a good question, because I used to get clients that would say things like, oh my God, you know, I don't ever want to be one of those people that are so narcissistic, they're standing in front of the mirror and they're watching themselves work out the entire
That's not what's, I know, as if they're looking at them, it's like, oh,
I know.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
and let's be honest, there is that side too, right? Yeah. There is guys that can't walk to the water faucet without checking their tricep out and their shoulder out at least three or four times in the mirror on the way there. So there is that level of narcissism, and I could see how that could turn off somebody who's not like an avid lifter in the gym. But I think their mirrors are absolutely necessary, and every exercise I do in front of a mirror if I can, and it's literally because I care about the movement so much that even to this day, an exercise that I've done 100 or 1,000 times, I still always think there's room for perfecting it and making it look even better. And so it's not about you and what I look like in the mirror. It's more about what my movement looks like, and without a mirror, I can't do that. Or without somebody
it's
standing
essential
there,
feedback.
Yeah, no,
you got to see what your body is doing to compensate, because it inevitably, like based off of patterns throughout your day, you could throw off your mechanics, and it's just it happens to the best of us. So it's one of those that you just need to see how to make little micro alterations within your lifts to make sure everything's on point.
It keeps you. It helps keep you. It's not perfect, right? But it helps keep you objective to your form and your technique and how you're moving away. Just like, I mean, our podcast is a bit of an example. I mean, the first, 100 episodes that I listen to myself talk, first of all, you hear your voice and it sounds way different on recording than you hear in your head. So first you get comfortable. Then you realize how you sound and how you communicate things, and you make adjustments. It's hard to be objective in the moment when you can't necessarily watch or see or listen to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's what mirrors provide. That's why gyms have mirrors. And if you have a home gym, I think a mirror is one of the essential pieces of equipment, just as essential as a dumbbell, a barbell, or a bench, or a resistance band.
Otherwise, or unless you are sitting there and recording yourself and then going back and watching it every single time.
Yeah, but then you mess up.
That's a little more weird.
But it's better to fix It's better to fix it while you're doing it.
No, 100%. I'm agreeing. You know, it's like that would be my only, if I didn't have a mirror in my at-home gym, that would be the thing that I would have to do. Like if I didn't have a mirror to look at it, then I would definitely record stuff. So especially complex movements, especially if I'm doing like a squat or a deadlift or a snatch or a movement that I want to see, where am I breaking down if it's not perfect?
Next question is from Connor Nagel 07. Should teenagers focus on aesthetics after being introduced to resistance training? And should they monitor their relative caloric and protein intake to accommodate their fitness goals.
Okay, so let's answer the first part, which is aesthetics. Now, being a teenager is probably
good luck telling them not to.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Right? That's like the I would say that
stop that.
That's when you start to get to the peak of insecurities. I would say teenagers start to become aware of a lot of these different types of things. I think one of the keys with fitness, I actually train a lot of teenagers. One of the most beneficial things I did for teenagers was to get their focus off of their aesthetics and move it more towards things like strength, mobility, and how they felt, because mm-hmm. they already focus so much on how they look. If you turn their workout into how you look, if it's all about how you look, you are very likely to create a negative relationship with exercise and resistance training. This is where body image issues, because here's the thing with working out. Working out can either really help you with your body image issue, or it can be just as powerful in the opposite direction and create really, really bad relationships and habits to where you might have been a little insecure about your body, but now because it's all about your body, you blow up this insecurity. You know, I've trained bikini competitors, and I've trained a couple male competitors, and they told me that their body image issues got far worse when they were competing, because they
of course exaggerates it.
It was all about how they looked. The judges were constantly looking at and critiquing their bodies. In fact, when I train teenagers, I don't ask them. I never ask them. So I'll do this with adults. Like, okay, well, what areas do you want to focus on? Yeah. How much weight do you want to lose? What are areas of your body you'd like to shape and sculpt? I don't even ask those questions of teenagers. It's not even a question. I don't say to a teenager, how much weight do you want to lose and what part of your body?
Teach them the fundamentals.
Yeah, do you want to shape and sculpt? That's not my question. I'll say, what are your goals? And if they say something like that, then I'll kind of maneuver about around it. But it's all about how you feel, performance, everything.
See, I find this a kind of a difficult one to answer, and maybe I'll be more qualified when my son is at this age. Now, I feel, Sal, you're going through this right now, so I think you're more than qualified and maybe can share like the conversations you have with your son. Because there's the other side of me that, like, hey, if you're a kid, like if my son, which is a good chance that he'll grow up to be very skinny and lean and tall like I was, and he starts to piece together that he can change that through lifting weights, and he wants to, I feel like there will be a very fine dance I will have to try and do. Like, I know that I want to give him those tools. Like, I don't want to be like, son, I'm not going to teach you how to lift or eat to build muscle or to look a certain way when you want that, right? If that's what he's asking to do. So, but then I also want to educate him on the dangers of that, of going down that and allowing those insecurities to drive his motivation. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, as a father, I hope that he's so into basketball that all of our workout conversations around performance, but I have to be realistic and think that there's a good chance that might not happen.
Yeah, I'm not saying be afraid. I think that will also do the same thing. If it's like, oh, hey, Dad, how do I get my arms bigger? And you're obviously avoiding that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's why it's got to be like a fine dance, because because there's a positive side. How cool is that if you're a dad who's or a mother who is a trainer and you have that knowledge and you have a daughter or a son that, you know, they want to start sculpting and building their physique, and they admire what you, maybe you've done your entire career or life, or the way you maintain yourself as a 50-year-old adult or whatever. Like, you know, so maybe now they're interested in that. There's the part of me that wants to give him that gift. Like, all the, I had to learn a lot of hard lessons, you know, through 20 years of lifting that I could hopefully fast track him to, you know, the ideal way to eat and train early. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to give that to him, but then also understanding that that also can lead to some major insecurities. And so, yeah, I feel like there's going to be kind of a little bit of a dance there. It's a different than when I have a parent who hires me to train their kid for whatever reasons. That's one thing. But having this conversation with my son, I think will present different challenges.
I've had this already. So my son, you know, we were working out, I don't know, it was like a month ago, and he's like, hey, how do I get my arms bigger? And so my response is, okay, if you get stronger at pull-ups and at bench press, then the side effect of that is bigger arms. That's the conversation. That's how I bring it up. What I don't think is a good idea is to teach them how to break their body down. Okay, so you need more delts here. And maybe if your pecs got a little bit better,
so they get all neurotic and bigger about it.
Exactly. Yeah. But if they focus on things like, how can I get stronger? How can I move better? Mm-hmm. The side effect of that being, I'm going to look a certain way. I think that's a healthier approach. Now, as far as calories and proteins are concerned, I think it's important that you educate them on what those mean. But I also think it's important that you don't create this crazy monitoring structure with their food where they're counting things. But I'll have conversations like this with my kids where they'll say, hey, can we have, you know, pasta for dinner? I'm like, oh, we got to have a little bit more balance. We had more carbohydrates this morning. So I think tonight we're going to have more proteins and fats. Or I'll say things like proteins and fats are essential. Your body needs those. So we're going to hit those first. Carbohydrates, not bad, but they're not essential. So, you know, it's not as important that we, you know, seek those out, for example. Or, you know, this food provides this particular nutrient. This is a good idea that we eat this because, you know, maybe you're getting a cold or something like that. So when it comes to that conversation, I'll do that. But the like tracking and like count those things and you got to hit these numbers. I don't know if that's necessarily a good path to go down. Really,
yeah, trying to bring it back to like healthier conversations about macronutrients and like how it benefits your body overall. I mean, same as I look at with like the pursuit of having bigger arms or like having shredded abs. I know, like, I mean, this is just stuff that kids even talk about at school already. And I think it's just because of Instagram and it's because of things where, you know, people notice things about bodies early on and they're like, why does he look that way? And so, I mean, I'm already having these conversations with my kids. And so it's just one of those things. I try to like understand that these are, you know, pursuits that some kids have, and they like the fact that like maybe they're showing off their muscles at the pool or whatever, but you know, trying to bring it back to a healthier objective of that is if that's benefiting their overall health, then, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
I can already see though that my kid's like so much less insecure than I was. He doesn't really display the insecurities that I did. He kind of doesn't care. He'll try out for sports teams, doesn't care about, you know, what happens. He'll work out. It's not a big deal. I, at his age, was this was like when it was hitting at a super high level, and I was just in the backyard working out 2 hours a day because of those insecurities. So I think a lot of it has to do also with just how they are with their parents and how secure they feel with, you know, being themselves.
Next question is from Taylor Dinkle. You guys seem to be pretty confident. Do you have any tips on cultivating confidence in life?
Oh, gosh. You know what's funny? The minute you stop caring...
Dude, we are the best.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We're the most confident. You know, the minute you stop caring about what people think about you... Now, not all people. I think it's important to care about what important people care about you. Like the good friends that you have and family members and your kids... But once you stop caring about what everybody else thinks about you, then you just be yourself. And here's the other side of it. Do you want people to like you for being yourself, or do you want people to like you for being someone fake? Because that's an important thing to kind of understand.
I think it's like developing a muscle. You know, confidence is something that, you know, it comes after you start to understand yourself more and you're secure in the way that you are. So like all your flaws in consideration and really like just... owning it, if it's something you want to change, it comes from within. Like if you're relying on other people to tell you, you know, this, that, the other, too much about their feedback as opposed to your own, you know, pursuits, I think, you know, that's something to evaluate. But I think it's just something that it just grows and develops, you know, the more you bring back like your own, like, what do I want to do? What, you know, where do I want to go with this? What do I want to learn? What do I want to change about my own, you know, body, of things that are obvious to me, and just like try as much as you can to bring it back to, you know, your own pursuits.
Today you are you. That's truer than true. There's no one alive that's youer than you.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss.
That's right.
I love that.
Yeah, that's Maximus's quote that's on his Instagram page. And I think that, like, I was asked, like, I don't know, it was a couple weeks ago when I did my questions. Like, if I could hand my son one quality and that was it, what would it be? And it was confidence. And I think that's really what it is. Sal, I think you hit it on the head. Like, the reality is... The more you care less about it, the more confident you become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I remember this like in high school, like because I didn't have money, I had crooked teeth, I was the skinny kid, like grew up on the other side of the tracks. Like I didn't have in the high school world, I didn't have a lot of things that were working in my favor to become like a popular kid in school. And when you're a young kid like that, you care about that stuff. And what I started to realize was as I was getting older and growing up and in my teens, the more that I cared less about that and I was truer to myself and just was going to be me, the more people that I attracted. Like, people are drawn to people that are like that. Mm-hmm. And so the people that I feel that struggle with this, they desire it so much that they get hung up on it. They're trying not to be them. They're trying to be somebody else to get the attention of other people. And this is what causes them to lack confidence, is because they're not being real to themselves. They're trying to act a certain way or dress a certain way or be into certain things so other people will like them, and they're not being true to themselves. If you just learn to be who you are, which should be the easiest thing you possibly could do, and be confident in that, that this is who I am, and there's nobody alive that's like me. Mm-hmm. I'm unique. Every one of us are extremely unique, and be confident in being different. You don't want to be normal. That would be the worst thing in the world, is to be like other people. And so recognizing that you are so special, that you are so different, that you are so you, that nobody else can do you, and being true to that, people will gravitate toward you and people will be drawn to you because of that. And so it's just learning to love yourself for who you are. And that includes all the quirkiness and the nerdiness and the things that make you different from everybody else. Don't allow other people that, and here's the other thing too, right? Because this is where this gets challenging, especially for young kids that are growing up, is when people tease you and put you down. The moment that you make the connection that when people tease you and put you down or make fun of you or point out the things that are different about you, that's a reflection of their insecurities. And so when you start to make that connection, that it has nothing to do with you being unique or different, has everything to do with that person is projecting their insecurities on you, that should build confidence in you. Like, oh, wow, this person feels threatened by this thing that's different about me. Even though they're teasing or pointing at maybe an insecurity of your own, them doing so is a reflection of their own shit. Once you realize that and you stand firm in who you are and you're like, fuck yeah, I am that person. I am confident about that. I am who I am, and nobody can do me. And the more you solidify that, I think the more confident you will become and the more people that you will attract.
And you know what's difficult about this particular conversation is I think it sometimes gets confused with I like who I am, therefore I never have to grow, change, or improve myself. Like, you know, I'm lazy, I don't take care of myself, but, you know, I'm confident and I care about myself. And that's it. You're mixing two things up. Like, one of the best ways to cultivate and build confidence is to seek growth, real growth, not like pretend growth that's driven necessarily by insecurities, but rather challenging yourself and overcoming challenges. That builds confidence. If you want a child to be confident, you allow them to encounter challenges.
They gotta be tested.
And to fail and to try again and then to succeed. It's an amazing thing to watch when a kid, they've done studies on this. Kids that are raised this way will work on a puzzle much longer than other kids. They'll keep going to try and figure that puzzle out. So confidence is also built that way, is that, you know, I'm not perfect. That's okay. I'm comfortable in my skin. So it's okay. I'll tell the truth and I'll have that integrity, but I'm also trying to be a better person. I'm also trying to grow. Those things are simultaneous. They work together. It's not one or the other, because I think sometimes people think, oh, you know, you just got to love who you are. So therefore, that means I'm not going to grow because that's who I am and I love me. You know, that doesn't mean that's not what that means.
No, that's the difference between confidence and cockiness, right? Somebody who's,
or narcissism.
Yeah, it's cockiness, right? You think you think that you've arrived and that you're somebody who is confident doesn't ever think that way. They think that somebody who is really truly confident knows that you know what's the Stoic thing to say is that I know that I am wise because I know that I know nothing, right? You are forever in pursuit of growth. And you are forever looking to grow and be better. And that's what makes you confident, is being okay with, okay, I lack in this department. Oh, mm-hmm. I could be better here. I'm going to continue to push that way. Yep. When you're the other person, when you think you've arrived and you're smarter than everybody else, you're better than everybody else, you're more popular. Now
you can
cocky.
Recognize other people out there better than you at things.
Yeah.
And you're fully okay with that.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I'll give you an example from a fitness standpoint, from a trainer standpoint. The trainer that lacks confidence is the trainer that pretends to always have the answers when the client has a question or a problem. Even though they don't know the answer, they're not confident enough to say to their client, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Confident trainers say, I don't know a lot to their clients. They'll say things like, I don't know, but I'll find out for you. That's what real confidence looks like. Fake confidence looks like, I got this all under control. I know everything. I'm the man or whatever. You know, look at me, check me out. that's a projection of insecurity. It reminds me of the, you know, I was eating dinner with Jessica. We were eating at an outdoor patio at Santana Row, right? And you see a lot of nice cars in that area. And if you live in the San Jose area, you know Santana Row, and you know that you're going to see two or three Ferraris or a couple
Maseratis,
$100,000 or $200,000 cars. And it was so funny that you'd see them drive by, and you know they'd be just driving by because there's a road there or whatever. And then every once in a while, one would drive by and they would rev their engine super loud. Hey, yeah. Look at me. Look at my, man. Like everybody's already looking at you. You know, that's not confidence. It's insecurity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
With that, Mind Pump is recorded on video as well as audio. Come check us out on YouTube. You can also find us individually on Instagram. You can find Doug at Mind Pump Doug. By the way, he posts a lot of behind the scenes stuff. Mostly about podcasting, the art of podcasting. You can also find Justin at Mind Pump Justin, me at Mind Pump Sal, and Adam at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.